earlier in the week, we heard the alarming news that contaminated water from the Fukushima nuclear plant had most likely been seeping into the sea since the disaster 2.5 years ago. Japan's nuclear watchdog has described the leaks as a state of emergency. It's a pretty sobering reminder about the long-term effects of nuclear disasters and radiation, isn't it? And one that struck a chord with our next guest, who's not long returned from a tour of Chernobyl, the site of what's widely regarded to be the world's worst nuclear power plant accident. Now, Rob Napier is the director of Napier Agricultures, board member of Central West CMA, and for many years was the principal of Orange Agricultural College. He's still very much involved in the industry. He was in Poland for an international farm management conference recently and was curious to see how the area is faring 27 years later. So he headed across to the Ukraine to find out, as you do. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Angela.
Now, a visit to the site of the world's worst nuclear plant accident probably isn't everyone's ideal side trip after a conference. What was the appeal and the interest for you?
Well, I guess I'm one of these retirees that just won't lie down, Angela. But no, I'm interested in environmental issues around the world and what we can learn from them. And often you've got to go to extreme places to really get some messages about where we need to go from here.
And interestingly, this was part of an organised trip, an organised tour.
Yes, the only way you can get into Chernobyl is on an organised tour, very tightly controlled, as you'd expect.
Yeah. Now, many people will remember this accident 27 years ago, but for those perhaps too young, can you remind us briefly what happened back in April 1986?
Well, it was really a series of errors. There were design faults. They'd rushed the construction. It was the Cold War. The Russians were trying to get some supremacy and really get their electric power generation going. There were egos involved. There was flouting of safety procedures, it was really an unnecessary experiment. What they were doing was seeing if they lost the power through an attack or whatever from outside, whether the power plant could respond quickly enough on emergency power. And they lost control of that process through a series of errors.
And how extensive was that damage in the immediate time frame?
Well, it was an enormous nuclear explosion, shot 9 tonnes of radioactive material into the air. And the immediate damage, of course, was to the plant, then to the firefighters that came in without protection to try and quell the fires. Then they brought 600,000 people into clean-up, and so lots of people were contaminated in the process. Then on top of that, I think a lot of our listeners will remember a cloud of radioactive material went over the Ukraine and Belarus and then right over Western Europe. And in fact, the accident was first picked up, because the Soviets kept it quiet, was first picked up in Sweden, when people going into nuclear plants there were suddenly triggering alarms and they'd picked up the radioactivity from outside.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
Oh, very serious.
And then the flow-ons for years to come. And I guess it brings us to the sort of situation now. What are there still significant dangers?
Oh, it's one of the things about radiation, and it's certainly the experiences has made me think a lot more about learning about radiation. It's a hidden enemy. You can't see it, and you don't know what the effects are. It's been very hard to really pinpoint the direct effects. One major health effect that is pretty well nailed down is a significant increase in thyroid cancer in children in the Belarus area, in all the affected areas, and indeed maybe in other parts of Europe as well. But because it's a long-term thing, because it's insidious, the 600,000 people that came in to clean up the mess in a 30-kilometre radius of the plant, probably 200,000 are going to die prematurely. But they're in and out of hospital, they've got problems with internal organs and that sort of thing. But fairly hard to absolutely pinpoint what's due to radiation and what might be due to other effects.
And so where were you allowed to go on this tour?
Oh, well, it's pretty amazing. Because the base levels of radiation around the plant are quite low now. Now, there are hot spots all over the place, and you've got to be very careful to avoid them. But because the base level of radiation is pretty low, you can get right in there. We went through a checkpoint at the 30-kilometre exclusion zone. We then went to the town of Chernobyl, which some of the old people have come back. It's very eerie, with lots of houses abandoned and everything else, but some old people and
so people are allowed to live nearby?
Just the old people, and it's at their choice. And a lot of people, of course, older people just didn't want to leave. It was dislocation of their lives. Not allowed in if you're under 18. Then we went on to they've bulldozed most of the village buildings and buried a lot of them to get rid of the contamination. But we went to an abandoned kindergarten, which is very eerie and very sad. Just everything left there, like an apocalypse. We went on to the nuclear reactor area, and you could see the reactors they were going to build. They were building two more huge reactors. You could see the waterways, and the way nuclear power stations are quite often near major waterways. So if there's an accident, then the radiation can really affect lots and lots of people. And we got up quite close to the reactor building, the sarcophagus that's covered in concrete, and we saw the huge tomb that they're building, because the concrete's breaking down, a huge tomb, the biggest movable building in the world, 20,000 tonnes, they're going to move over the top of the sarcophagus and concrete it in again and hopefully seal it forever.
Do you think, I mean, from what you were told, will that do the job?
What we were told, and we, you know, it's one of these things where long-term effects we don't know, but that's the plan. It's being funded by the EU with some US money as well to try and stop this thing, absolutely. But all this huge reactors, there were going to be six of them, all just frozen in time there, and all the associated infrastructure, incredible. And then we went on to Pripyat, which was the town a bit over a kilometre away, 43,000 people, that was all the people were linked to the running of the reactors. Totally deserted, eerie. And a lot of people will have seen the shots of the amusement park that was about to be opened. It's quite ironical that the Pripyat was an ideal Soviet town being promoted as this is the way it all should happen. And all the bigwigs were going to come into town a few days later, and bingo. And they had to evacuate Pripyat in 3 hours. They evacuated 43,000 people in 1,000 buses.
Amazing, amazing figures, isn't it?
Yeah, so we really had a close look at it all. And, of course, we were checked for radiation on the way out.
Did you have to wear protective clothing?
No, just had to cover our long sleeves, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yes. And we had Geiger counters with us all the way, so we were testing radioactivity as we went.
And what did you notice on those counters?
Oh, where there were hot spots, our guides, of course, knew where the hot spots were, and they could go and show us that the radiation levels would be up thousands of times above the base radiation level.
My guest this morning, Rob Napier from Napier AgriFutures, well known in this region for all sorts of involvement in farm management. Now, from that perspective, as an agriculturalist and farm management person, what most alarms you about this whole terrible accident in the years that have followed?
I think number one is the long-term effects of radiation that we don't really understand, and so we have to be just so careful, and it particularly affects children, young people, and we're exposed to radiation in all sorts of ways in our lives, and so we need to get a better understanding and of that sort of thing. I think another pretty important message is we do share our environmental mistakes. The people of Europe and even beyond are very severely influenced by that particular disaster, and Fukushima will be somewhat the same. So we really have to work together
to
minimise that.
Yeah.
That's pretty important. Another thing out of it is we need transparency. Aren't we lucky in this country that we're able to question things? In the old Soviet system, you just couldn't question, and a lot of that lack of questioning led to the disaster. So we need to keep a lot of transparency on these particular issues. Also, we need to understand the image effects and reputational effects, and this is particularly important for agriculture. The people of that area have great difficulty exporting food, dealing with food products, and their whole personal image. There's lots of apathy, lots of health problems resulting from apathy and social and economic upheaval that went with that. So we need to guard our image, food scares, that sort of thing. Mm. We really need to try and avoid those sort of problems. And I guess finally, we need to do the what ifs. We need to prepare ourselves strategically for things that can happen, whether it is a food scare, whether it's an extreme natural event or something else. We need to think about what should we do to prepare ourselves if certain things happen. Not to be scared about things, but just good planning, because there will be problems. Yeah. We can guarantee those, and we need to be prepared.
Working in this sector for a very long time, do you think we've got better at this? And some of these big disasters overseas, be it Chernobyl or Fukushima or other things, are we learning those lessons?
I think we are, but there's a natural tendency of human beings just to think short term and to deal with today's issues and not to do enough of the long term what ifs and get that into our risk management. Our farmers and a lot of other people are very good at the traditional risk management of managing production risks and market risks and finance risks and so on. I think we now need to add to that list strategic risks about some of these low probability but big consequences if they happen sort of events, and just feed those into our risk management so that we can protect our families and our businesses and our nation a little better.
Fascinating to talk to you this morning. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences. You have brought in some photos, and we might take photos of your photos and pop them up on the website, because some of these images will be very familiar. These places will be very familiar to us. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Angela.